Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. We are brunching. Let's go.
For their purchase. We surely appreciate it. What you about to witness is my thoughts.
Just my thoughts, man.
Right or wrong, just what I was feeling at the time. You ever felt like this?
Okay, Ove, I got it from here, man. The calling number is 929-477-2759. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with the chefs. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world. But the kids, the boys, the men, they are back in the building. Happy Sunday to everybody out there. Pro Bowl Sunday. I know everybody can't wait to see the Pro Bowl. Not knowing I'm joking around about that, even though I got to talk about it. I got to tell y'all how I feel. I got to talk about this sports scene as I see it. I got my brother and my co-host with me, R. Keezy, calling out of the West Coast. Mr. King, how are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling good, timeless, man. Excited about what's in store for today. I might not be all about the Pro Bowl, a little glance here and there, but it's San Diego State at UNLV. It's going to be a big game. I'm excited.
Well, I'm just joking with the Pro Bowl stuff. I'm not hype as I was back in the 90s when everybody, the heroes used to be there, the Jerry Rices, of course, Barry Sanders for me, and LT for me, you know, a lot of the thugs of the new chapter, if you will. I want to say from the 80s up, that's when the thugs came around. I mean, of course, it's an important spectacle because, you know, a lot of these players get known as all pros, so on and so forth. But the fun has been taken out of it. None of these guys tackled. They got so many rules now. And I understand they're trying to protect these players because how much money they're worth. But the game is definitely lost it for me. I just had to try and throw that out there for the people out there in Sports City. As we get, we're 7 days away from the Super Bowl. So I had to say something in light of the Super Bowl. So I said the Pro Bowl to be funny. If people want to talk about the Pro Bowl, I highly doubt it. But I'd answer and entertain questions. Of course, they had the competition stuff go on. But that's not intriguing to me as it was back in the day because it's lost its luster. Okay, so I'm going to feed this guy, a.k.a. my brother, some home cooking, right? So obviously, the game went down, something that at least we both know about the series that went down back in the 80s. But this game went down yesterday where the Los Angeles Lakers came into Philadelphia up against the Philadelphia 76ers. And it went different than I would have expected. Now, the Sixers are impossible. I can't say impossible, but a tough task to figure out while they're in Philadelphia. While they're in that building, they've only lost twice this season. In which I thought that it would favor the Lakers because the Lakers at least had more firepower going into this game with Joel Embiid sitting out. The Lakers lose this game by 18 points to the Philadelphia 76ers. And it baffled me because, like I just said, Joel Embiid was out, and I would think, you know, more of the Anthony Davises or the bigs that they have coming in and out of the game would have been more controlling of the game, in which Anthony Davis did finish the game with 31 points and 7 rebounds. But for them to lose at this amount, I mean, I can't really say too much bad about the Lakers because they're playing excellent ball at this point in time. But they've been losing the last two big losses. They lost by over 30 in Boston. They lost by damn near 20 in Philadelphia, which I want to hear your thoughts on the game in which your boy Ben Simmons damn near put up a triple-double up against a lot of people's, you know, mirror image of LeBron and Ben Simmons.
Well, Thomas, I thought this was a great game for the optics with everything that was on the line. I'm not sure yesterday's contest between the Philadelphia 76ers and the Los Angeles Lakers really was about the win or the loss and how it might affect the standings. I thought it was more about the entertainment and some of the predictions of Philadelphia facing off against Los Angeles Lakers in the NBA Finals, should that happen. But the reality was, without Joel Embiid, there was no real way to gauge what people would expect to be a full complement of players should it come down to the NBA Finals. All that being said, again, yesterday was more about LeBron James' opportunity to pass Kobe Bryant and move into third on the all-time scoring list. And when you look at the box score, Thomas, and you see the shot attempts, once again, it's about the show. Lake Show is on the road. It's LeBron. It's AD. It's their only time in Philadelphia. Unless they can have an NBA Finals matchup. So you give the people what they came to see. Heavy doses of LeBron and AD. Those guys took the lion's share of the shots. No one else was in double figures except those two gentlemen. So I thought it was just all about the entertainment. And it was fortunate for Philadelphia. I think they needed that kind of contest to give confidence to guys like Kirk Maz, Shake Milton, Tobias Harris, Al Horford. I mean, we know he's a former All-Star, but Ben Simmons and what it was he accomplished was outstanding yesterday. He's looking like if something was to go wrong in Philadelphia, he could absolutely be the player that they build that franchise around going forward. But that's not what it's about right now. It's about getting healthy for the Philadelphia 76ers, getting Joel Embiid back, getting Josh Richardson back. It was great to see Matisse Thybulle, another young player, start to come along, you know, and just develop, round his game out, not just be defensive-minded. So it's a great win, but I'm not going to make a whole lot of it. It's not like there's much different going on here. Have game, will travel is what I want to see with the Philadelphia 76ers. As you mentioned, only two losses at home. However, I think they're 9-15 on the road. That has to change. I would love for the Sixers by season's end to be at least 500 on the road. You've got to be able to win on the road if you want to win an NBA championship, Thomas.
So is it really the situation of Joel Embiid coming back to for them to get their stride back, or is it something that they can figure out now with the addition of Embiid coming back? I think it makes them even more powerful. They're sitting at sixth in the East. I feel like they are underachieving at this point. Yes, they are in the top eight half of the Eastern Conference. I feel like they can be playing better, but there are some tough teams that are in front of them right now that are playing quality basketball in this time. And knowing that what is hampering Joel Embiid has happened from the game that we both were paying attention to you, with the injury to Embiid that happened in the Thunder 76ers game where he broken his finger. But, you know, hopefully he can, you know, go back into the paint, do his thing, or conduct jump shots from up top, which is, you know, a smooth point where he likes to hit his shots at. But I wonder if they can continue this stride while Embiid comes back and they keep, you know, he hits the ground running, more or less is what I want to say. But now, on something that you did talk about was the situation with LeBron passing Kobe Bryant. How do you weigh this situation? Because at the end of the day, I'm not going to lie, Sports City, LeBron, I feel LeBron will end up passing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's record. I think LeBron is going to pass that in the next 2 to 3 years. He's going to end up eclipsing that amount. Your thoughts as he passed Kobe Bryant, and I think next up is Karl Malone and then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Well, it's a huge accomplishment for LeBron James to look. He's had the longevity. He's got the years in. Much like Kobe Bryant, he's a guy who came straight out of high school. And as while LeBron wasn't touted to be the lethal scorer that Kobe Bryant was, he was just efficient. His field goal percentage continued to rise as he matured within his game. He began to add the 3-point shot. Imagine if LeBron James over the last 4 or 5 seasons actually shot 75% from the free throw line instead of killing us with that 65-67 that just drives fantasy almost crazy, Timeless. He might have passed Kobe Bryant last season or maybe the season prior to. So much like all the all-time greats, you know, guys like Shaquille O'Neal come to mind. When you leave tons of points at the free throw line, it makes a difference. So you have to probably put extra miles in. But nothing but compliments for such an achievement. It signifies and highlights a portion of his greatness that, again, people aren't going to talk about LeBron James and his scoring ability. They're going to talk about all the expectations to come in, be a winner, help other teams win. He'll still ultimately be measured by the championships he does not have. However, true supporters of greatness and the purity of what it is to be great in anything, in any sport, in any category, you have to give LeBron James all his props because he flat out earned it. He's going out there. He's done the work. He's taking care of his body. He puts his money where his mouth is when it comes to taking care of his body, playing well with teammates, looking for others, and he eventually figured out how to be the man if he needed to call his own number and be clutch to close out a game. However, he's never had the kind of ego that said, I must be the guy who takes the final shot. So the thing I love about LeBron James, he's always going to strive to make the best basketball play in every situation, whether that's him taking a shot or making a pass to a teammate. So a salute is greatness, man. It's a great achievement.
Okay. Here goes the crazy portion of the show. There have been people in the media that are out there, and you know this is a comment that they bring up when they throw Mike and LeBron, they throw LeBron and others, but the guy that he just passed in Kobe Bryant. There are people that are already saying right now that LeBron is better than Kobe Bryant. I want to cook right now. How does RTV feel about that question or that situation?
Well, look, I love when people want to talk about who's better. It's not the thing that I like to do. I think fandemonium has everything to do with it. In my younger days, timeless, it was the type of argument I would get into. And regardless of how anybody felt, you stand where you stand, and that's it. And you can't really be persuaded to move otherwise. So there was a time when people were saying, like, who's better, Jason Kidd or Allen Iverson? The answer for me is Allen Iverson. Is Kobe Bryant better than Allen Iverson? No, Allen Iverson is better than Kobe Bryant. Is Tracy McGrady better than Allen Iverson? No, Allen Iverson is better than Tracy McGrady. Like, that's just where I was as a fan. As things change and you mature and, you know, some guys don't get the same amount of longevity. They don't have the same complement of players. They don't get the opportunity to win as many championships. And so there are a lot of people who are influenced by who has more rings nowadays. I think that has absolutely nothing to do with individual greatness. When it comes right down to it, the conversation about Kobe Bryant and LeBron James, in my opinion, Thomas, is two different guys, two different styles of greatness. However, I recognize greatness when I see it. They are great in their own respectful right. I'm not, if I can choose, and because basketball is a team sport, at some point I would probably choose to put both guys in the same starting five. I don't think there'll be many times where I would select the starting five and I would pick Kobe and leave LeBron out, or I would pick LeBron and leave Kobe out. Like, it just doesn't make sense. So the beauty of basketball is, even though media and marketing highlights an individual skill set, the name on the jersey, at the end of the day, it's a five-on-five team sport in terms of who's on the court at one time. So give me LeBron and Kobe, and you can just add any other three you feel like you want to add, and I think they always have a good chance of coming out as winners.
And it makes for an interesting debate, and, you know, Michael Jordan had to answer a question. Everybody's like, well, you know, is it LeBron or you, Mike? And Mike said, we played in different eras, and LeBron has made his mark. So I respect Mike's situation, and Mike even actually said, I am a fan of LeBron. So at least you finally get to hear more out of Michael Jordan about the situation than others. But knowing that LeBron has passed Kobe and this question has been passed around before LeBron eclipsing the mark and getting past Kobe and doing it in a Laker uniform, no less, is interesting in itself. They're going to, you know, anticipate the situation. And I understand that argument, right? And I love it, too, Royce, that you brought it to that scenario. And I'm going to be personal about it. The situation that people measure a lot of our great athletes from yesteryear, or the time that we grew up loving the sport and picking one of our favorite players that we like, so on and so forth, they get measured by championships, and some of them haven't got a championship, i.e., look at the guy that LeBron is behind right now, Karl Malone. And I feel bad in saying this. If it wasn't for Michael Jordan, Karl Malone would probably be put on this Mount Rushmore. Because if you look at the Mount Rushmore, who do you put up there? You know, like, you got to figure out what player to put up there, you know. And then it robs Karl Malone in the conversation on being one of the best being the best power forward, which I would put Tim Duncan. But, yet I measured Tim Duncan's situation because he got 5 championships. You know what I'm saying? But if I'm looking at the measure of work in the entirety of Karl Malone being able to do a lot of the work in the Western Conference, it was just him and Stockton. They picked up Hornacek later in his career. They really did a lot of the work out there with Mark Eaton and so on and so forth. So looking at the scenario of LeBron being measured by his championships, yes, he's gotten to 9 NBA Finals. He's lost 6. He's won 3. You know, and looking at Kobe, Kobe's won 5. He's been to 7. He lost twice. You know, and Mike never lost. You got the Kareem situation where Kareem didn't lose many. Kareem has 6, and Magic Johnson got 5. But Magic went to 9 NBA Finals in his 11-year career, which is astonishing. That's why I love when people bring up the best L.A. Lakers, because it's like I look at Magic being the best Laker, to be honest. You know, like if I'm putting Kobe up there or putting and LeBron even in the conversation, Kareem and Magic go hand-in-hand with me with that Laker conversation. But all other sports, and looking at the Jerry Rice situation compared to Randy Moss, and I put Moss ahead of Jerry, because Jerry was birthed into a great offense and a system. And, you know, Moss came into a Minnesota Viking team that was trying to find their identity with a new coach in Dennis Green. And the lone star that was there was basically Chris Carter. You know, I mean, they ended up getting Jake Reed. They got Randle to be the backup after Brad Johnson got hurt. So I love that standpoint that you throw out, that a lot of athletes that we know get measured off of what the team's success is off of, you know. So it's a very interesting stance, and I love that. And I'm grateful that you brought that one up, because that's something that I get to talk back and forth with you with no interruption. But you stunned me. I didn't think that you would have put Allen Iverson in front of Kobe or Mac either, T-Mac. And I love – you know I'm a Hoya fan. I love AI, so that's why I'm stunned. Yeah. And I'm at the edge of my seat with this conversation, bro.
Listen, I am sometimes when people see you, they feel like, you know, you stand bigger than what you are sometimes. Depends on what I might have on or how you view me in size-wise. You know, I might look like I'm 6'3", 6'4", but there was a time in my life where I was that 6 foot, 6'1", 142-pound guard. You know what I'm saying? So it's very easy for me in my younger days to identify with a guy like Allen Iverson and his toughness and his diehard mentality. And when you hear a guy like Kobe Bryant say, thank God Allen Iverson wasn't 6'5". Like, he only needed to be 6'5" to be hands down the best shooting guard ever. Like, he pretty much put him up there next to Jordan. Like, he was that tough of cover. And he's grateful that Allen Iverson was, you know, in a sense, height challenged. Now, don't get it twisted. Am I a fan of Kobe? Absolutely. But if back then, when people held your feet to the fire and made you choose one, I had no problem, since I grew up on the Sixers and Dr. J and everybody else. Of course I'm going to ride with my guy. I was loyal. I appreciate Kobe's game. I appreciate T-Mac game. I was a regular wearer of the original T-Mac and stuff like that. So, you know, as a fantasy owner, I played around a few times and made sure that I had Allen Iverson, Kobe Bryant, and Tracy McGrady on the same team in fantasy. So don't get it twisted. I appreciate their games. They're different guys. They've done outstanding things. Some had careers longer than others. Obviously, Kobe has the most rings. I think, you know, to me, T-Mac was very electric, undervalued, underappreciated, just dominant. And Allen Iverson, I mean, he's iconic. He took a lot of heat. And as he would say in his own words, he took the ass whipping so everybody in the league could now just be themselves. So that's how I see greatness, man. Wherever it is, I see it.
I love it. This you don't even know what this did to me, because you know I'm a Hornets fan. You know I love AI. I still remember that crossover on Michael Jordan where everybody's like, he crossed Mike. To me, I'm like, he just got Mike to move. That wasn't a big crossover like everybody else I've seen Allen Iverson yank up. And if you pay attention to that play, Michael Jordan was still there to contest the shot. So it wasn't like Iverson yanked him up, but I love it. So calling in Hugh, we have a caller here. We have Chef, breaking news, Brian Hughes in the building. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
What's good, guys? Good morning.
Good morning. Nothing much. How are you?
Good morning.
Doing good, man. Doing good. I was listening to the talk. Appreciate the insights from both of you guys.
Okay, so your thoughts on the topic at hand?
Well, I mean, and obviously, I'm a Lakers fan. Like Roy said, Kobe is my guy, but I don't know if I'd necessarily throw McGrady in the same category, but AI in his time, absolutely was completely and utterly dominant in an era when you could put your hands on guys. I mean, that's another thing that's got to be talked about. Today's NBA is a lot different than the NBA from 10, 15 years ago. And the guys that are effective now, that are fast, I'm not saying that they wouldn't be the same. I'm not saying that they wouldn't still be good players. But you look at guys like Westbrook, right, just for an example, and you wonder how his game would have transitioned to 15, 20 years ago when his game is predicated on cutting and slashing. And 10, 15 years ago, people could just ride your hip. Just put their hand on your hip and basically just ride you around the court. And Allen Iverson was still able to be extremely successful. But the debate between LeBron and Michael, I kind of feel like, look, it's kind of like, do you like chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream? I mean, I still view Michael Jordan as the all-time greatest player. That's, obviously the player that we grew up on. But if you look at the stats, Ty, like if you just in a vacuum, right, let's say Smith's the name on the back of both jerseys, there's plenty of supporting factors that say both of them could be the best, right? You know, granted, I don't think anybody would disagree that Michael was much more the defensive presence, but LeBron is a much better rebounder, and I understand size plays into that. He's a much better passer, not just as a big man, but just as a basketball player. Points-wise, they were very close. All-star appearances actually favors LeBron. Defensive player obviously favors Jordan. But I think ultimately, like I said, this is the same kind of debate that I have when we're talking about football. I really think you have to almost look at players in a vacuum, right? You have to look at in their era, how dominant were they, and compare that to the new era. Because the issue is that if the game has evolved and the game has changed, you can't just strictly go by championships, because if you're making a Mount Rushmore, then Russell's got to be on it, because he's clear, far and away, the best player in the league that's ever played then. You know what I mean? So it's an interesting conversation. I love the way you guys answered. I don't necessarily think definitively that either one, you could say clearly this is the better player, but I think there's stats that support both of them. You're going to choose the person that you prefer, but, even being a Lakers fan, I still think Michael Jordan's the best player I've ever seen. 9 first-team, all-defensive player, honors. I mean, he was just all around, both offensively and defensively, probably the most gifted player. I mean, everybody talks about his scoring, but they forget about how great he was as a defender.
Right, and this is what makes this an excellent debate, and this is in all sports. I'm not just worried about basketball right now, even though this is the sport at hand right now. We all came up in that era where we've seen Mike from start to finish, from 84 till 98, and then he sat out and then got the owner, well, portion of ownership of the Wizards, and then when the Towers came down, he played those 2 seasons for free to help relieve the situation in New York City. I don't think anybody in today's NBA will play for free. That's one. Two, looking at Michael Jordan's situation compared to LeBron's situation, I could compare Mike more to Kobe because they played the same position, and Kobe learned a lot of what Mike did, or basically patterned his game around Michael Jordan. And, you know, he actually came up in an interview and said, Mike told me a lot about the game, and I used everything from his jump shot to how he felt defenders. He said he felt defenders using his legs and basically knowing where they were at on the floor and watching Kobe turn his game into that. The situation with LeBron James, and a lot of people try to negate the situation, and it's something that Royce brought up as well. At the end of the game where LeBron may be like, well, I don't have to take the last shot. I'll make the pass and make the right play. And that is the right thing to do if somebody wide open and knock down a shot. But it's some players that live for that moment, like, hey, just make sure I got the space to make this shot because I can get by this guy. Or looking at LeBron's situation where he's bigger than a lot of the people that defend him. If it's somebody as big as him, he's going to blow by him. He can use that to his advantage, but he'd rather not. So I understand where people manage it, but I like the go-getters. That's something in life that I like. You know, like whoever has that heart or that ability to go get it and make it happen, I like the game changer in that point of time. Like, it took the controversy or the conversation of people to point fingers at LeBron James when he was down in Miami the first year when they lost to Dallas, or the third year when they won that championship up against the Spurs, and then the fourth year came around and they lost to the Spurs, and then he left. It was like, well, when the going got bad, he didn't want to turn back around and face adversity. And that's something that I look at the athlete of today, not facing adversity and going through the fire again to redeem themselves, if you will. So that's why I'm looking at it differently compared to Mike and LeBron. But even though LeBron has a ton of stats, his point total is there, his assists are there, his rebounds are there. He's basically one of those players made in NBA Live or NBA 2K, whatever you're thinking of putting a player together. And he's strong, he's big, he's fast, and you know, he should win a lot of his matchups. But like I said, this is a debate that will go on until the end of time.
You know, Thomas, I really appreciate the way Brian kind of came in and approached that, because it's something that I would do with a lot of people when I'm assisting them with trying to choose the right players and how to construct their team in fantasy. And so his example of, for example, let's say everybody's named Smith, I'll take it another step further. I used to use Kevin Durant. So let's say you're looking at stats. You're on basketballreference.com, right? And you're looking at basketball stats, and everybody's name is Michael Jordan. Which Jordan will you pick, right? You're then going to look at nothing but numbers because the alphabet is exactly the same. Now you're not, and then, you know, we're biased in how we view things. And so certain things get triggered. The glory years of Michael Jordan is automatically triggered when you say his name, and that's when you started really paying attention. But see, there's selective memory, and people forget about the first 6 or 7 years of Michael Jordan's career, where unlike LeBron James, see, when LeBron came on the scene, people always wanted to play with LeBron because they know they were going to get an opportunity to shine. Sure. But with Michael Jordan, people didn't always want to play with Michael Jordan because he was always shooting the ball. He was a different player. The Jordan we really love and embrace and admire and respect that labels him the GOAT is all, in my opinion, Phil Jackson and beyond. Everything before Phil Jackson, Doug Collins, and whoever his rookie head coach was, it's just like, this dude can score. He's a butthole. He doesn't want to pass the ball. Orlando Woolridge was trying to get out of there. Reggie Theus wanted out of there. Like, everybody wanted to get away. Like, yo, this dude is on his own selfish mission. He's never going to win. But something clicked. Something happened. And he became who he became. When it comes to LeBron James, he's always been a team player. He's always shared success. Like Brian also pointed out, I mean, he just came along in a different era. He had the privilege of growing up on the greatness of Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. So he was able to make a particular kind of decision in the type of player he knew was probably best to be going forward to have success on the court. And not only that, but success in business financially with his name brand. All that being said, if you start looking at everybody's stats and you decide, I want the guy who has the best across the board statistically, I think people will actually be surprised that they will probably find themselves end up selecting LeBron James' name more often than Michael Jordan once it was revealed who the real is from the fake. So that's my thoughts on that.
Hey, Ty, and, okay. And one last point, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Hey, I think that this is at least worth mentioning, guys. You know, everybody kind of chastised and crushed LeBron early on. I heard you guys talking about it, about, you know, him being a willing passer. You know, we because of the era that, you know, just NBA fans in general have grown up on, seeing the superstars that always had to have the last shot, we crushed the guy that was willing to pass to the guy that, you know, was in the corner with nobody around him. Like, that was a bad thing. That was the wrong decision, which, when in actuality, it's the right decision. You know, mm-hmm. The other thing is that I'd like to mention for LeBron is, remember how bad he was at shooting three-pointers when he came in the league? I'm not going to say Ben Simmons, but he was not a good three-point shooter. And you know what? It is something, just like all the greats that have that drive and that dedication. You know, obviously you could say it with Michael, you could say it with Kobe, you could say it with Allen. All these guys evolved. They've got better. LeBron has flushed out his game. But the one thing that I don't think you can make an argument about for any of these other players is LeBron is a legit four-position player. I don't care what the Lakers, what it says on the stat sheet. I don't care what it says in the media guide. LeBron James is the Lakers' point guard. He dribbles the ball up. He distributes. He facilitates. He plays power forward, small forward. He plays shooting guard at times. He plays point guard. There's nobody else that has the skill set to be big enough, tall enough, physical enough to play the power four or the four, but also be able to be agile, quick enough, and have the court vision to play the one. And I think that at least has to go into the evaluation.
And this is the same conversation that I hold for Magic in that regard, because Magic played all five. Like, and don't forget, his first season in the NBA, he was a rookie with the Lakers, and Kareem, I forget what type of leg injury he had, but he couldn't play ball. And Magic had to play the center position. And he was 6'9". He's an inch taller than LeBron. And when he hit a five and was going up against Dallas Dawkins and company, up against the Sixers, and won a championship as a rookie. So, like, that's why it's different for me. That's why when they measure the best Lakers, it's Magic to me. They lucky Magic didn't have more in the tank and have more pieces around them, i.e. looking at, you know, LeBron's situation and needing pieces around him, or i.e. looking at Kobe situation and how he felt when he didn't have to put pieces around him. When the pieces came, he was successful. So it's all perspective. It's all how people feel about situations, and maybe people skew it differently than I skew it. And it's all opinionated, because you're never going to get a clear-cut answer at the end of the day. But at the end of the day, like I said, LeBron's body has not really failed him, so he's going to be able to play. To me, I think he has at least three to 5 years left of quality basketball. That's why I feel like I know he's going to end up crushing career scoring total. I think, like, it's over for Kareem whenever it's all said and done when LeBron is done.
Well, you figure 82-game season, guys, 82-game mm-hmm. season, even if he scores 25 points a game, which is a little below, obviously, his average, you know, you figure a little bit of decline, that's almost 2,100 points a season. So, I mean, essentially what we're looking at, Ty, is, you know, two years from today, we're going to be having the conversation about him being the all-time point leader.
That's why I'm saying that. I know that Kareem is definitely in jeopardy. Definitely in jeopardy. I'm not even going to say what I could say, because I just want to knock a wood on the thought of it. But it's like, if everything goes according to plan, Kareem's record is going to fall. It's going to fall. And I don't know who will end up catching LeBron on the way that he's been able to play from 18 years old till now and still be able to play at a high level. That's one thing I do give LeBron a ton of credit on that he was able to do. Okay, we do have another call in queue. I do want to get off this topic, though. We have Nacho in the building. Nacho, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling good, just getting in. And, I totally agree with everything you guys said on the topic. We can move on.
Okay, so the next thing in other situations historically is going on, and I'm cooking today. Eli Manning hung up his cleats. He is retiring after 16 seasons in the NFL. Man, Sports City, I will bring the fire to the kitchen, and I want to see how everybody feels about this one. Is he Hall of Fame worthy, right? Now, this is where I'm bothered, right? Everybody is basing it on the two Super Bowls that he won, in which he beat the Patriots. And one of them was the historic Patriots season where the Patriots were 18-0, approaching a perfect season, and they stopped them, right? In which the only two stats that I had somebody address me with outside of the kitchen was he's seventh in passing touchdowns and passing yards, right? Outside of that, it boggles my mind on what will get him into the Hall of Fame. Is it just his last name? Is it the two Super Bowls? Or is it the seventh ranked, you know, passing yards or passing touchdowns getting him in there? Now, I look at a lot of quarterbacks that are not in the Hall of Fame right now that have, you know, stats that can get them there, but they're not there. Is it fair to already get Eli into the Hall of Fame, which would be, what, 5 years from now, which would be 2025, 2026 season, however we look at that? I want to see how you guys feel about that out the gate. What's your thoughts? Do you think Eli Manning is deserving of being in the Hall of Fame?
Well, Thomas, I'm going to be quick about it. So the experts in the building can really address Eli Manning, but if I had a vote, Eli Manning would not enter the Hall of Fame as soon as he's eligible within, you know, his 5 years. In my view, Eli Manning is the kind of football player who, if he is to ever enter the Hall of Fame, he has to take the long wait, right? It has to be, in a sense, almost like, you know, that stretch where it's a down year or two, and we're trying to find the necessary number of individuals to put in. And so you use exactly what you said, the two Super Bowls, where he might rank on the list, but that's probably going to change. So it's really about this guy knocked off Tom Brady in a historic season. Outside of that, there's no way I'm putting him in just based on his namesake. Is he a Hall of Famer? Body of work from what my eyes saw watching the Giants and watching Eli Manning, absolutely not. Do I think he'll get in? I think he gets in about 15 years.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. I think, okay, fair enough. Let me get around this kitchen because it sounds like I think I got a hot dish. Nacho, I'll come to you. You didn't get to talk yet. Your thoughts on Eli Manning and his retirement, and do you think he is Hall of Fame deserved?
The retirement, I think we all kind of felt it was coming with the seeding after the 0-2 start, him only coming in because of the injury to Daniel Jones. That team looking like it's trying to move forward in the direction with Daniel Jones to fix his fumbles and then it might have a competent quarterback. So he saw the writing on the wall. I think he wanted to uproot his whole family from where they're at in the comfort of New York or New Jersey, wherever his home's at around there. You know, does he want to do that and take him to another place where he's probably going to have to compete? No. So we kind of thought that retirement was coming. Is he Hall of Fame worthy? I think 15 years is crazy. You know, there's only five quarterbacks in the history of the NFL that have two Super Bowl MVPs, and he is one of them. So that's crazy to me. But it's not. Because even though he has Super Bowl MVPs, two Super Bowls, you know, defeating the team that most everyone thought was the greatest team of all time, the 18-1 team, and then the organization that everyone thinks is the greatest of all time, and beating them twice in their prime when they had everything clicking. And this guy's still questionable. I think the crazy thing is if he doesn't get in on his first ballot, which I don't believe he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I do believe he's worthy of the Hall of Fame. But if he doesn't get on his first ballot, He retires now. Let's just say Ben retires next year, and then Drew Brees retires next year. And then the next year after that, it's Phillip Rivers, and then Aaron Rodgers. And then, you know, anyone else who
Brady
used to play so, for the next, you know, 5 to 6 years and has a good career ahead of them. It's absolutely crazy that we are talking about it, but you have to when in a 15-year career, it's a 4-year span. And again, they're not astronomical numbers. He just happens to go on two great runs in the Super Bowl to the Super Bowl with a defense that happened to be clicking. So it's just you count that, do you not? Again, top 7 in yards, top 7 in touchdowns. I'd like to see where he has and where he's at in interceptions. And then, of course, we all know it's 117 wins and 117 losses. I don't know what screams mediocre other than that, but it's just – it's crazy. So, yes, do I believe he's worthy of the NFL Hall of Fame? I think two Super Bowl titles and two Super Bowl MVPs is something that's rarefied air. So he'll get in. The last name gets him in almost alone, and he'll be in there. But I think it's somewhere around 10 years. I don't think it's up in the 15. Again, you have to think about the names that will retire here soon, with the Ben Roethlisberger, the Phillip Rivers, the Tom Brady, the Aaron Rodgers, and Drew Brees. You know, if they go consecutively in the next 5 years, he could be looking at a, you know, not 8 to 9 to 10 year wait.
Okay, this is getting interesting. Well, Brian Hughes, your thoughts on this discussion, the retirement of Eli Manning, did it come before he started breaking other records like the interception total and things of that nature, or falling under 500? Because I think this would have been a situation where that 117 and 117 mark saved his tail, because he might have fallen below 500 in his career as an NFL quarterback. Do you think he's deserving of being in the Hall of Fame without the two Super Bowls and the last name of Manning?
Here's what I'm going to say about this, Ty. And you know what? This is actually a topic that we had set up to talk about on Monday, so I've actually done a ton of research on this topic. And I'm going to say, if you're a Giants fan, or if you're somebody that appreciates what Eli's done, you're gonna refer to no disrespect to Nacho, but you're gonna refer to the yardage totals, the touchdown totals. Look at, he's in the top 10 all time. Well, yeah, look at how many games he played. He's also number 3 all time in longest start streaks at 213, behind only Brett Favre, and I forgot who's number 2. So if you start that many games, you're going to have the stats. Now, this is the portion where the Giant fans should put on some headphones or maybe possibly tune out for a half a second. Eli Manning absolutely is not a Hall of Famer. Not even close. I think it's disrespectful to the Hall of Fame to have that conversation about Eli Manning. I'm so sick and tired of the Hall of Fame turning into the Hall of Mediocre. You know what? This is like Craig Biggio all over again, Ty. People want to put in people because they have one rare stat, right, that sticks out. Like, oh, he's got two Super Bowl MVPs, and only 4 other people have it, and they're all quarterbacks that are in the Hall of Fame or future Hall of Famers. Yeah, you know what? You're right. What if Joe Flacco wins another Super Bowl this year, Ty? Does he belong in the Hall of Fame? He had two good runs in the playoffs, and now he's a Hall of Famer? No. Super Bowls do not equal Hall of Fame status. Yes, I understand it's important for QBs. Let me give you some numbers, guys. In 16 seasons as a starting quarterback, Eli had a winning record 6 times. He was a Pro Bowler 4 times in 16 years. He was never an All-Pro. Repeat, never an All-Pro. His teams went to the playoffs 6 times. The 2 times that they went on a Super Bowl run is the only time he won a Super Bowl game. The other 4 years, he was ousted in the first round. Everybody has a different idea, Ty, of what a Super Bowl MVP looks like or what a Hall of Famer looks like. What I will tell you is this. You're talking about a guy who has a career completion percentage below 60%. You're talking about a guy who, yes, is in the top 10 all time in passing yards and touchdowns, but's also in the top 10 in interceptions. Led the league three times in interceptions. So, to me, it's disrespectful to even talk about this guy in the conversation because I don't think – not only do I not think – you know, I think if you're talking about the Hall of Fame, I think you're talking about a generational talent. Give me one year in his entire 16-year career where he was the best quarterback in the league. Give me one time frame, one period of time in his time and when he was a quarterback that he was even a top five quarterback in this league. And the answer is you can't. He had two good years, and during those good years, he still threw 20 interceptions. He is not a Hall of Fame quarterback. He is a compiler. He played a lot of games, which allowed him to get a lot of stats. Do I think he's going to get in? This is the part where anyone who thinks the NFL has integrity should probably tune out. Absolutely. And you know what? I'm going to take it a step further. He's going to get in first ballot. He's going to get in first ballot because the criteria for becoming a Hall of Famer is, can you write the history of the NFL without talking about this person? And unfortunately, he's attached to a lot of really, really well-known people like the Patriots organization and what went on there. Perhaps the greatest catch in NFL history, perhaps the greatest catch in the Super Bowl. You know, he has so many things that he's attached to. I think he gets in first ballot. I think the name on the back of his jersey definitely helps. But do I think he's a Hall of Famer? Not only do I not think he's a Hall of Famer, Ty, I don't think he's the best quarterback from his own draft class.
I agree 100%. And I feel bad, Brian, that I think I came into the kitchen and may have stolen the recipe because I was cooking this up already, but I didn't know that I seen the paper and might have wrote it down. But there's one standpoint that you threw out there that I wasn't even thinking along the lines of trying to, like, dump this situation off. Brian just said, is there any point in time from, what, 2004 till now that he was the best quarterback in the league? Hell, top three in the league. Let me even be more fair to the topic. Top three. Like, I'm baffled trying to pick a year. Even in the year that they won the Super Bowl against the near-perfect season with the Patriots, or the other one where they won in 2011, where Manning had made the catch and Wes Welker dropped the pass. Like, so many things went his way. And then people say the Super Bowl MVP. Really? Did he really deserve the Super Bowl MVP? Or do you go to anybody that you want to think of on that defensive line, more or less to me? I say Justin Tuck, at least in that first one. But they would never give it to a defensive player in that scenario. Now, I don't want to totally pick him apart, but I have to because this is the way that they're measuring certain players that are not in the Hall of Fame comparison to one of the, I want to say, like the first family of the NFL, which somebody pegged them as Archie Manning being the father, his older brother being Peyton, and everybody knows Peyton is the poster boy, and Eli. And I can't lie that the Giants didn't earn that Super Bowl, but that wasn't an Eli let me just be fair with the number, three touchdowns game. Like, he threw three or four touchdowns, no turnovers, and had, 75-80% completion percentage, and his QBR was off the hook. Like, I don't look at Eli and that Manning. Yes, he's a durable quarterback and something about his strength, and even if he had an injury, he would fight through and get back out there on the field. But that's probably the only thing that I give him is the guts and the heart that he had to get on the field to make it happen for the Giants. But other than that, there are a ton of quarterbacks that are sitting there waiting to get into the Hall of Fame, and they're not. And I feel like they contributed more in football game. But here we go again with the same situation that went throughout at the beginning of the show, and I love the way that we cook today, is how people get measured off of the hardware or the championship that they were able to attain while they were in the league. So I feel like this is helping Eli by him having the two championships. Other than that, other than the two Super Bowls, Yes, he may be top 10 passing yards and top 10 to passing touchdowns, but just like Brian said, he led the league in interceptions on different occasions. It's not even like, okay, he took that personal and he's going to come out here and just let me be fair with a number. So, and I'm laughing and smiling when I say this. Hey, let me come out and throw 12 interceptions this next season. Like, and he still was throwing 25, 23. Like, the numbers are high. Like, ridiculously excruciating. Like, the only quarterback that I could think of that was throwing a high number of Clipper interceptions like that was Phillip Rivers at that time, you know? And that's the one thought that I do have with Eli is how Eli came into the league. Archie robbed the draft and said, well, my son is going to a loser because San Diego picked him up first. They ended up forcing a trade to happen between New York and San Diego. Phillip Rivers is with the loser, even though Phillip Rivers did a lot that he could do with that team. Eli is put in a situation where they fell into the lap of two different Super Bowls. I can't talk bad about their runs because they went through some tough teams, getting through Dallas, getting through Green Bay, making some miraculous stuff happen, and definitely winning that Super Bowl up against the 18-0 at that point in time Patriot team. But I agree with at least some of the panel. I don't think Eli is a Hall of Famer. I don't. Like, there's a ton of quarterbacks that I could throw into this, especially ones that are still waiting that I like that should be in the Hall of Fame, but I feel like they're going to wait till they're 65, 70 before they give them their acknowledgement instead of letting them enjoy it at this point in time.
And,
yes.
We have to also remember that the people that put this man in have never been rubbed or shrubbed or been talked to the wrong way, and that's the media. We have never, ever seen or heard of Eli Manning being abrupt to the media or being rude to the media or anything, and they are voting him in also because of that. Being nice helps. The hardware as well, the last name on the back, that's all going to play a big-ass factor. Sorry for my language, but a big old factor on why he gets in. Again, I bring up the Super Bowl MVPs because I think it's a big deal. He did, I guess they're lucky catches, but maybe it's a PTSD because in 07 and 11 what he did to Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. So I don't know.
Yeah, guys, that's why I kind of pushed it out as far as 15 is because everything that you alluded to is the reason why he would probably get in. In a sense, basically, this is my plea to everyone involved with voting Eli Manning into the Hall of Fame is, look, if you're going to vote the guy in, give us a break, right? Like, let's wait 15, 20 years. Like, you know, like Thomas alluded to, they have guys that are waiting until they're, you know, almost 60, 65 years old. And I just feel like that's how you should approach Eli Manning and his career and everything that he's done. His achievements are what they are, but his complete body of work does not stand for, as Brian so eloquently pointed out, what any league Hall of Fame should represent when you think criteria, when you think moments in time, significant blocks of time where there's flat out a single season of dominance. There's no one better. Did he ever have that kind of impact? No, he didn't. So let's wait a while. Please, please don't make this man a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think it's a crime and a travesty if that was to occur.
Hey, Timeless.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I just wanted to piggyback on something Nacho said. And Nacho, I'm not trying to pound on you, brother, but you're the one that's obviously in favor of Eli Manning. I have a big problem when we get to the point where we have to qualify why we're going to let somebody in, right? Like, he's really nice. Like, this is the Hall of Fame. I don't think anybody would have ever called Lawrence Taylor nice, right? But there was not one person that thought to themselves, well, we're going to leave this guy out. Like, this is the Hall of Fame. If you have to question it for a second, is this guy a Hall of Famer? He shouldn't be in. That's the problem with this league. In general, the NFL, is we watered down the hollows. This dude's going to have a bus, right, in Canton next to guys like Joe Montana, next to guys, you know, like Terry Bradshaw. He's going to have a bus next to Bart Starr. I mean, you're talking about the legends of the game. You want to make an argument for Peyton because of his dominance in the regular season? You know what? I'm willing to listen to that. I think his brother has – he's probably going to get in first ballot too, but I'll be honest with you. I don't necessarily know that I think he's a lock. He should have been a lock in the first ballot Hall of Fame.
Oh, my goodness.
He cooking any time. He's cooking bad, boy.
This is why I love this dude. Because I feel the same way about Peyton. Look, and I'm so passionate about it. Like, I feel like I'm screaming. like Peyton is a regular season monster. If it's September 7th till December 31st, I'm worried. Like, if he come out there, like, this is a concern. If they are not in the RCA Dome where he used to play or Lucas Oil, and they're on the road, and especially if they're facing the confines of being in a cold environment, you show me where he threatened people. You show me. Like, both of his Super Bowls that he won are questionable to me. Like, he beat a Bears team with no offense. They only were with defense. That defense was out there the whole Super Bowl in the rain. In the rain, up against a team that didn't really have a good secondary. Their front seven was what you had to worry about. They beat the Bears down there in Miami. And then the Super Bowl that he won up against the Panthers, they said that they were going to blitz him all day and force him to pass the ball because he wanted to run. Everybody remembers him being up there in front of the media and walking off stage because the play Chris Harris was talking about, he's basically saying, we were forcing him to throw. We knew we got the game. And that's exactly what happened. He won that Super Bowl up 140 yards passing. Like, C.J. Anderson won the Super Bowl MVP. Like, I'm not even wholehearted about Peyton getting there, but I know this upcoming ballot, Peyton will be in there for sure, because I think this is the fifth season, if I'm not mistaken, of him being retired. So, Brian, I'm eating the hell out of that dish. Boy, I love it. That's like lobster and crab for me. I love it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cricket soup this one out. Is there anything else that people would like to address? Because man, we are at the tail end of the show right now too. We have an early closure. Is there anything that they'd like to add to this before I get closeouts from each of you? Okay, fair enough. It saved me. In Sports City, I want to let you know, first and foremost, today is Vince Carter's 43rd birthday. So on closeouts, I want to hear your most memorable Vince Carter moment, right? Whatever you can think of. I have one. Hopefully y'all don't steal mine. And plug and closeout and promo. First and foremost, I will start with you. I'll start with you first, Brian. Give me a plug, closeout, shout-out, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut the doors on the brunch this afternoon. Well, this morning, Phil. I'm sorry.
Well, I just want to say, guys, it's always a pleasure to talk with you guys, here on the Sports City Chefs Network. I do have a debut episode this Monday called the NFL Free For All. It's back. Myself and a co-host, you guys are more than welcome to come and dice it up. We will have a few topics, including the Eli Manning one, so I kind of let the cat out of the bag how I feel, but we have a lot of other great topics. Ty, when it comes to Vince Carter, and I cannot remember the guy's name for the life of me, but I remember it was either his rookie year or second year in the league. He got a screen set and went right down the lane. And there was like there was a center, and I want to say he was like a European. And I remember Chris Carter dunked. The guy just put his hands up. He didn't jump. And Chris Carter dunked, and I remembered that Chris Carter's legs, his private area, let's just say, was on the guy's shoulder. And I was just in awe because I'd never seen, even with Jordan, and no disrespect to people who love Jordan, I'd never seen that kind of elevation. I mean, he would have hit his face on the rim if he wouldn't have went to the side. So I apologize that I don't know. I can't remember the moment more clearly, but the thing I remember the most about Vince Carter is just his incredible leaping ability.
that is everything about Vince Carter. It's that leaping ability. He may have some blocks here and there, play the defensive play, but that I think his leaping ability is everything. Well, at least to me, that's what I loved about this. I can't lie. But everybody tune in. I wanted to buy it and go first because he has a show tomorrow, right here in the kitchen. Tune in tomorrow evening. Nacho, plug, close out anything that you'd like to promote and your Vince Carter memory.
At Nacho in the Box, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Can't wait to hear Brian's show tomorrow. Be at least listening in on my way home. Great show. Thank you guys for letting me come in and say my stuff. Vince Carter memory, there's a lot, but I distinctly remember watching this game because being a Phoenix Suns fan, growing up, you know, after the Charles Barkley and the Kevin Johnson era, you just despise the Lakers and the Spurs. This is a particular Spurs game where he dunked over Tim Duncan and made him look like a fool right up the middle, and it was just awesome because I hate the Spurs. I remember that distinctively, jumping up and screaming, and my cousin, who's a Spurs fan, laughing in his face. But, yeah, that's a good memory, and, of course, all the big guns. Of course, in Denver, I believe, the All-Star game when he throws it off the glass. I was a young man, so I don't think I'd ever seen that. And that was something that was really, really distinctive. But, yeah, man, everything. He's so amazing to watch. Again, I got the tail end of Jordan. I didn't get the meat and potatoes of him. So watching Vince was just amazing. It was awe-inspiring. You always wanted to be like him when he jumped on a little play, super the front yard. So, and thank you for letting me come on. Good show. Vince Carter doing it to 43 is wow. But all right, man. Thank you so much. You guys have a good day.
You too. And Royce, I don't even know where you gonna go, but I hope you don't bump into the one that I got in my sleeve. But plug, close out, shout out, anything you'd like to promote in your Vince Carter memory.
Well, shout out to everybody for coming through Sports City, chopping up with us today. Appreciate all the insight and the knowledge. Plethora of talent here inside Sports City Chef Network. It's hard for me to isolate a singular moment of Vince Carter. I enjoyed what he did at the University of North Carolina. I enjoyed everything he did in Toronto. I feel like he really took that organization to a whole nother level. Imagine what the Toronto Raptors would have been if Vince Carter makes that shot against Allen Iverson in the Philadelphia 76ers after the media absolutely destroyed him for showing up for something that we usually salute people for, and that is college graduation. I can't believe the media took that approach with Vince Carter, and now they love him and they desperately want him to be in the media. Rachel Nichols is always talking about, I can't wait to have Vince as a permanent regular here on the Jump. All that being said, Vince Carter, the dunk contest, always going to be talked about. Vince Carter's three-point shot does not get enough conversation. Vince Carter was more complete than he's given credit for, and I would just encourage everybody, do your homework, check the tape, and then call us back next week and you tell us your favorite Vince Carter moment. Other than that, man, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Royce King Sports. Got some great things cooking up here at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and I'll tell you about it once it all comes to fruition. I'm out, Thomas.
Okay. I'm glad that they did touch on it, even though Brian was close, because that was one of them. I was going to go with the Frank Rice dunk when he jumped over Frank in the Olympics. That game happened off of a steal by Gary Payton. Gary Payton gets the ball to the fence, and Ben jumps over a seven-footer and puts it in his mug. And I still remember Ben Baker's face and Ben Baker looking at Frank like, you smell like skunk. And Kevin Garnett pushing him damn near on his back. And they all were hyped up, but that's one of them. I'm just going through all of that. That's what Brian said. I still think of the ones that hurt me, like the Alonzo Mourning situation that happened in Miami or the Dikembe Mutombo situation where he was like, nobody's dunking on me. And then Michael Jordan called him, and then Vince said, oh, yeah, well, you're going to get it, too. And then Vince dunked on Mutombo and looked at him like, you think I'm scared of Mutombo? That's another one. And then the one where Chris Mullin was D-ing him in Indiana. He took one step away from Chris Mullin, went baseline, and he did the most ridiculous backwards dunk. And the way that he flew, Rich Smith didn't even want to jump. Like, Rich Smith looked at him coming and was like, are you serious? I'm not jumping with him. That's the other. But nobody will ever touch this one because it's like in the vault of Vince Carter, and it's probably on YouTube. But if you didn't see it, please go to YouTube and watch it. This was when Vince Carter was in high school becoming a All-American. And this is when everybody down in Florida knew about him, but nobody across the country did. He gets a steal at half court, and the guy is basically back at the rim waiting to play defense. Vince Carter looks at his mom in the crowd and blows a kiss at her, and then jumps from damn near the foul line to dunk on this guy miserably. I'm talking about horrible. Like, and I think that was the thing that basically catapulted Half Man, Half Amazing, and the nickname that they gave him. I still remember it because he blows the kiss at his mother and just flies. And it's like, wait, if you knew this guy already was a scouting report, let him go. like you build another playbook behind this. And he started to jump with him. It's like, are you out of your mind? Look, Vince Carter, I can't say enough about you. I am a fan. I know I'm a fan. I love the way that you flew. I like that Royce brought up the dunk contest of 2000. Everybody remembers every dunk that Vince Carter did, even the dunk when he put his arm through the rim. And everybody thought it was a regular dunk. The dude dunked with his elbow. Like, ridiculous. All right. Sports City, tune in tomorrow. Brian Hughes is at the helm. I'm mad that I stole his dish, but I couldn't hold it any longer, especially because I live right here in the tri-state area. Everybody going mad about the Eli Manning situation. But on that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.